And this hour, we'll take your calls with Richard Dolan as we talk about UFOs and disclosure. We'll be doing that next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with Richard Dolan. Richard, the late Zechariah Sitchin believed that the Anunnaki, an ET race, came to this planet, seeded us, genetically altered whatever species might have been on the planet and created us. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I actually was never in love with the way Sitchin put that argument together. To be perfectly honest, like his interpretation of the Sumerian tablets, I know there are people who really supported it, never did it for me. But I will say that in a roundabout way that some version of that could be true. That, in other words, we could indeed be the subject to genetic manipulation that comes from outside our species, and that could be many, many thousands of years ago. I'm not sure I go along with Sitchin's theory of the Anunnaki in this regard, but I do think it is entirely possible to see that we were, you could say, seeded or maybe enhanced. That might be the way that I would want to put it. I think it's totally possible.
What do you think of the Travis Walton case?
Oh, goodness. Well, I've known Travis for many years. I know him very well, and yeah. I've studied that case in a lot of detail. Like, I read a lot of the polygraph analyses of Travis and transcripts of a lot of the people he was with who made testimony. No, I think Travis Walton was definitely taken as a result of a flying saucer incident. These loggers all saw the same thing. Travis was missing for 5 days. I do think he was taken. His memories are very clear-cut about it. I totally believe it. I had a 7-hour drive once across the state of Pennsylvania with Travis, just me and him. We talked about everything. I really got to know him. He is absolutely honest, straightforward.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Humble guy, too. Yeah, he's a good guy.
And they all passed lie detector tests, all of them.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, there was a lot that was made. Oh, no, he flunked his polygraph. Not true. Not true. The first polygraph that Travis took, remember, he's a 22-year-old kid, and he was subjected to the most unprofessional, hostile polygraph interrogation one could imagine. It was utterly unprofessional. This guy was berating Travis, really putting him on edge, and did, I think, everything possible to try to make him flunk that polygraph. So, no, it was not legit. The late Philip Klass, the arch skeptic, tried to use that against Travis, and no, not honest at all. Travis and all those guys passed. And, like, the questions of his coworkers are like, did you see a UFO? Yes. Did you kill Travis Walton? No. They all answered exactly the same, and
yep,
all the truth. Like, no, that was legit. That was real.
I remember interviewing when I was 21 years old back in Detroit via phone. He was out of Boston. Dr. Benjamin Simon, the psychiatrist who handled the Barney and Betty Hill case. And I will always remember the one question I asked him and his answer, and that was, Dr. Simon, were they telling the truth to you? And his exact answers were, they were not lying. Whatever happened to them, they believe it.
Right.
What does that tell you, though, Richard?
Well, first of all, that's super cool for you that you got to talk to Benjamin Simon. So let's just put that right out there. Because this is the man who really opened up from a hypnotherapy point of view the whole thing of alien abductions. This is,
yep,
the guy who interviewed,
this
who
is the one,
hypnotized Betty and Barney Hill, and he did a great job of it. So the thing about Benjamin Simon is that, okay, so he always maintained that Betty and Barney Hill were absolutely honest. Like, he always did that. But he himself did not believe in UFOs.
Right.
And so this was a difficult thing for him, because he's doing a deep regression of these two obviously high-quality, honest individuals who are giving him a completely consistent story. And, I mean, you know, I don't know if he was trying to come up with excuses as to how they could have confabulated this or not. I never really had this sense, like, of what I read, that he really believed that they were, like, even unintentionally making it up. I just think he didn't really want to go there in terms of the UFO reality.
Well, it was my impression, Richard, that he didn't really know what happened to them. You know, he was baffled,
yeah.
But he was so determined to tell us that they weren't lying to him, that whatever they thought they were seeing, whether it was delusional or not, they believe it.
Well, that speaks well of him. I mean, you know, let's cut the man some slack. He was the first one to do this, and he obviously didn't really know a lot about the UFO subject. And he, he did a very good job in regressing them. And if he's not willing to go to the full conclusion, like they were abducted by aliens, okay, fine. But you're right. Like he never said that they were deceptive, which they weren't. They weren't
right.
Deceptive.
He never said that. Yeah. Never said that.
That's very interesting that you got to meet him. I'm jealous.
On the phone. On the phone. They never met him in person, but it was on the phone.
Oh, well, good enough.
The guy I did meet was Jimmy Hoffa.
You're kidding. Come on.
I was the last reporter to interview him in May of 1975. He disappeared in July of that year. And invited him on our television station, got him all set up, and he was on for about 7 minutes. And I walked him to his car, and he shook my hand, and off he went, and that was it for him.
How about that? Wow. Yeah, boy.
Quite a city.
His life did not end well, that's for sure.
Nope. Let's go to the phones. Bill in Los Angeles starting us off. Hello, Bill.
Hi, George.
Hey, good to have you with us.
Hey, George, by the way, did you have something to do with Hoffa's disappearance? That's kind of coincidental, isn't it?
No, sir, I did not.
Yeah, Richard, I think I'm probably in a similar position as you philosophically. I'm a former newspaper journalist who's equally critical of people like Seth Shostak and Bob Zimmerman, both of whom I've had discussions with, who bend over backwards to explain away even hard empirical data that they can't explain by earthly technology. But I'm also concerned equally about a trend I've noticed lately of people misusing quantum physics to falsely claim that everyone creates their own reality and that there's no such thing as objective truth. And I just wonder, can't we find a middle ground that maintains a respect for testable, logical problems and that also has, you know, leaves some open-mindedness for you know, alien visitation or whatever, but that we try to maintain our wits?
Yes. Well, you're speaking my language. And the fact that you live in Los Angeles, like I suspect you are surrounded by a lot of the quantum theory that you were referring to just now. I actually met Seth Shostak a couple of times and was decidedly unimpressed by every single aspect of his intellect, has to be said. I mean, he is not a good representative, even for skeptics. Like, he should be able to do much better than he does. So, yes, I agree with you. Like, there's this extremely closed-minded, skeptical mindset. I think some of these skeptics, I have suspected for many years, they corner themselves into a skeptical position because of their public persona. Like, I could just imagine how difficult it would be. Like, you take a public position on this, how do you easily change it? Like, guys like Shostak and the other skeptics, they've got their own public, they've got their own market. And I don't think it would be easy for them to say, oh, wow, after looking into this, I guess UFOs are real after all. Like, they're not going to do that. It's very difficult for someone who's been established in their field to change it. I mean, there's pressure on me. I'm very upfront about admitting this. Like, people want me to be the UFO believer, and I'm supposed to believe in this and this and this. And I diligently have always tried to maintain my own independence of thought and not to be guided by what I think the public wants me to say. And, you know, overall, I think I've done that, but I don't know if I'm perfect either. There's always pressure. So I suspect that's part of the problem with these skeptics. But the opposite end of it is like, oh, yeah, create your own reality. Oh, my God. Like, I believe in the power of the mind in many, many ways. So I would not even dismiss that out of hand, but I do agree with you. Like, that can go to ridiculous extremes. And there has to be, like, evidence-based, logical analysis of available, agreed-upon facts should be a legitimate thing to do and to be done with open-mindedness and even some creativity is not a bad idea. But also knowing, like, what are the limits of what we absolutely know and where are we speculating? And, like, yes, absolutely, everything that you've just said. I think it's totally legitimate to speculate. That's what I did in my last book. I openly was speculating. And there's no crime in being wrong if you speculate, as long as you're upfront about what you're trying to do. We're just trying to figure out a very, very fascinating, deep mystery here. And we're certainly not going to get it right on our first or 10th or even 100th attempt at it, because this is a tough one. So we need to be brave, and we need to be a little gentle with ourselves, recognizing it's okay to be wrong. But these dogmatic people on one side or the other, it's like you get the dogmatists on the skeptical side, and you get the dogmatists on the create your own reality side too. I've met a lot of those people who are like, they are absolutely convinced they know everything that's going on with this phenomenon. And, you know, you hear that, you just roll your eyes as well. So yeah, there's got to be a good middle ground. And I think a lot of us are trying to find it. So I agree with you.
Richard, I had Seth on last week, and there's no question he believes there's life out there, but is vehement when he says it's never come here.
God.
He just won't admit that.
It's, you know, I mean, I got to the point in my encounter with him where I just realized, like, there is no reaching this man. There's no way he is ever going to open his mind even a little bit. And even to understand the UFO history, which he knows nothing about. The data, he knows nothing about the data. It's like, if you're going to be a skeptic, that's fine. Be a skeptic. I've met some good ones. He's not one of them because he doesn't know the subject. Like, it's, you know, it's easy to issue theoretical objections to why UFOs are impossible. Sure, they don't make sense. They defy our common sense as we understand this reality. But the problem is, this phenomenon is real. We have been encountering it. So we need to start understanding and explaining it. And he's just, he clearly doesn't know any of the history of this phenomenon in any way that I would consider sophisticated. So how can he be a legitimate skeptic? He doesn't know the subject.
Why aren't we getting any more astronauts to come forward? They've all passed away.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I don't know. You know, there's a few of them out there who I know are open to talking about this. But what I think is the case, I can't speak for these people. I'm only guessing. But there's a lot of corporate control over employees these days, and that includes NASA. You know, there's a public relations issue. I mean, think about what happened when Buzz Aldrin talked about the power on Phobos or the object that followed Apollo 11 out to the moon. Well, he had his own handlers who made sure, like, in the next day or so, Buzz is out there saying, oh, no, it must have made an obvious mistake. Like, clearly, these folks are not permitted to go beyond a certain line. They're just going to get into trouble. So if Buzz Aldrin has to walk back his statements, I mean, that guy's a legend, then the more recent astronauts, they don't have his status. They're not going to be able to go out on their own and be maverick renegades and just...
Yeah, nobody even really knows who they are. Let's go to...
Right, so they don't have the power.
Let's go to San Diego, California, west of the Rockies. Robert is with us. Hi, Robert.
Yes, hi, Robert in San Diego, overlooking San Diego Harbor, and where about 40 years ago, I stepped outside, a friend was leaving, and I said, look up, and I looked up, and about 60,000 feet up, I would estimate, it's hard to estimate altitude, but anyway, there was four golden orbs glowing in the night sky, and one shot down about half altitude instantly and just for a few seconds, and then apparently they saw they got my attention. It went back up with the other orbs and whoosh, gone. Just left a blur in your vision. They disappeared away so fast. But that's not the reason I call. An avid science fiction fan friend alerted me that by email that their favorite UFOologist author researcher Richard Dolan was going to be interviewed by you, George, tonight.
Perfect. And,
about his 245-page book, The Alien Agendas. And relative to this, they also urged me to go to eBay.com and simply type in the seven-letter name Von Heck, V-O-N-H-E-C-K, in the eBay search box at the upper left of their website. Well, anyway, much to my delight, up popped a fascinating, dramatic photo of a 36-inch square canvas painting showing a woolly-haired spaceman originated in 1973, which preconceived the Chewbacca co-pilot character in the 1977 Hollywood Star Wars movie.
Perfect.
And the rather epic presentation is selling off the industrial designer Von Heck's copyrighted artwork and is supported by text and a dozen photos of the Hollywood celebrities that were trying to help promote the precognitive spaceman concept leading to the Star Wars Chewie character which greatly enhanced the alien relationships.
Well, I always wondered how George Lucas, Richard, got that character in the first place. Maybe that's how.
Maybe from that. Hey, by the way, sir, thank you for your call. All of that was interesting to me. Your sighting was quite fascinating. I'm guessing you had great visibility being in San Diego. Nice to know that there's someone who likes my book, The Alien Agendas. I very much appreciate hearing that. So.
Everybody that reads it likes your book, Rich.
Well, it's always nice to hear it anyway.
It is. Nothing wrong with a compliment every once in a while.
I'm very grateful for that.
And by the way, where do people get the book?
Well, we can link it to I've got two major websites. I have Richard Allen Press and I have Richard Allen Members, and it's linked there. I sell them off of Amazon.com, so they're available, paperback and Kindle ebook. Both versions are available to readers, and that's the main way. I don't really try to get them into, you know, big box bookstores anymore. So,
are you still publishing for other authors too?
On a very limited basis. Honestly, I've really decided I want to scale that back. I've let those authors basically get their own book, and I publish my books. It's a lot simpler and easier. I really wanted to give a nice run to be a publisher. Man, that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. You did a great job, though. You did a great job, and you've been doing that for a long time, haven't you?
I did, yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes, and I still publish my own work.
Rich, we're going to take a quick break and come back with final calls in just a moment here on Coast to Coast. Richard Dolan with us. We'll get to your calls when we come right back. And, of course, his latest work is called The Alien Agendas. We will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. George Norrie here with Richard Dolan and your final calls as well. Richard, what was it that got you interested in UFOs in the first place?
Wow, that takes me back. Well,
way back.
We're going back to the early 1990s. And honestly, I think the thing that triggered it more than anything else was a trip to a bookstore, random bookstore, and I saw a book on the display stand, which said, Above Top Secret, The Worldwide UFO Cover-Up. That was by the great Timothy Good, of course. And I remember picking the book off the shelf. This was in the very early 1990s. And at that time, I was very deeply engaged in American history. I was studying. I wanted to be a professor at an American university that I thought was going to be my career path. And I was studying a lot of Cold War American history at the time. So I'm looking at this book, and here's Tim Good. He's talking about Cold War UFOs, basically, worldwide. And I thought, wait, what? How come I never read about this in any academic history book ever? Is this real? Is this BS? What's the story? And I bought the book. I thought this is actually a very good book. And that really got me on my way. And I think that was 1990, I think 93. And around the same time, I got into what was then the early internet. Before the web, there were still news groups. And there was one news group called Alt-Paranet UFO and Alt-Alien Visitors. And I started going to those as well. And I had no idea that there was this UFO community. Like, that kind of blew my mind. And the next thing I knew, I just thought, you know, I didn't want to get the, I didn't think I could try to get all the answers to it, but I wanted to know one answer, which was this actually ever taken seriously by the United States government?
Right.
And that's really all that I wanted to know. And that was the magical question that led me on the next, it's been nearly 30 years now, good grief. But yeah, it's taken a hold of me and it has not let go.
I think I got started when I was Look magazine. My mother gave it to me that highlighted the interrupted journey of Barney and Betty Hill. And after that, I was hooked,
yeah.
Richard. I was hooked.
It's what happens. It's an amazing mystery. And I think, like, if someone's just got a bit of a curiosity to their mind, how can you not be interested in this? Like, this is a fascinating subject. And I would say it's important. Like, it signifies a very important reality of other intelligences, other beings that are here. They're operating every single day. We don't talk about it openly in this society anyway, nearly the way that we must. And so it's interesting and it's important.
Let's take final calls. Mark in Baltimore, Maryland, to get us started. Go ahead, Mark.
I appreciate that. Mr. Dolan, I have great respect for you. I agree with everything you've said. I remember picking up Mr. Timothy Good's books when he first came out. One of the best ones is that real thick one called Above Top Secret. That's a great book right there.
Yeah.
So
that's the one.
My question, sir, do you think that we gained any advanced technology from the Roswell incident?
Yes, I do. That's my opinion. And I think that when you look into the Roswell case, I mean, Roswell got so much attention for so long. I really think some people, they got sick of Roswell. It's like, enough with Roswell. Let's look at other things. But Roswell, there's a reason we really got into the Roswell case, because there are a lot of very powerful witnesses to that case. And the answer is yes. I do believe that exotic technology was recovered. That is technology that does not originate from our civilization. And Roswell is one of several instances in which the United States military acquired exotic tech, and they took it off for very advanced study. And by the way, you know, we have some very solid historical documentation indicating that the Roswell wreckage did go get shipped off to Wright-Patterson Air Force mm-hmm. Base in Dayton, Ohio. That's U.S. Air Force headquarters. And one of the guys that I'm very, like, a huge fan of in this field is the late Leonard Stringfield, who during the 70s and 80s and 90s collected quite a few firsthand accounts dealing with alien bodies, crash retrievals, and the like. And so I do think that there is a powerful case for the acquisition of advanced tech. That is, I mean, it's one of the greatest secrets of our time. You know, the fact that we've gotten this incredible technology that is has covertly been studied within the classified world. So, yes, I believe the answer is yes on that.
Next up, Dave's in Columbus, Ohio. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'd like to issue a challenge to you and your guest.
All right.
Contact the President of the United States. Go out to Area 51. And demand to be let in. You could build one of your TV shows around that. Be like Geraldo going into Capone's Lodge. Your ratings would go through the roof.
I don't think they'd let us in, Rich. What do you think?
I heard most of that. I'm sorry, sir, if I couldn't hear it exactly right. Forgive me. But to essentially, what, break into Area 51, or did I hear something different there?
To go to the president and get an invite.
Oh, it's Area 51.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? If President Joe Biden wanted to let me get a trip into Area 51, I would certainly go. I wouldn't sign an NDA, though. I wouldn't want to sign a non-disclosure agreement. I'd want to be able to talk about what I encountered there. That's a challenge, you could say, but it's not a realistic challenge. I think the odds of getting Joe Biden to listen to either of us, especially me, are next to zero. And then furthermore, to be able to get permission to get into Area 51 is, I don't know how to calculate that.
Even if there might not be any UFO activity there, it's still a classified airbase.
You're not going into Area 51. It's not happening. I had some friends who did some TV documentary that took them to the border of where Area 51 was, and they just stupidly thought, oh, we're going to go over this barrier here. We're going to record it, and we're going to scream at the people, let us into Area 51. And they spent the next 2 hours or more face on the ground by security, who eventually let them go. But no, you know, you're not breaking into Area 51. That's not happening.
If a mouse goes over that electronic line, they know about it.
That's right. Yeah, they've got highly sophisticated sensor systems there. That's for sure.
East of the Rockies, Bob's with us in Charlestown, Indiana. Hello, Bob. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Hello, Richard. I met you in Laughlin, 20 years ago, 21. I had bought both of your UFO and the National Security State, bought both of those books. But in the last 6 years, I've lost my vision, and I found your volume one on Audible 2 weeks ago. I've already listened to it twice. I wonder if your new book or your volume two of the UFOs in the National Security State are going to be on Audible.
What a wonderful question. The answer is yes. But first of all, I just want to say you must have met me at the very first public appearance.
Yes, it absolutely
that I
was.
Ever made for UFOs. Yeah. I remember that. That was in March of 2001 at the International UFO Congress in Laughlin. Bob and Terry Brown organized that. Wow, I'll never forget that. Thank you. That was a really exciting week for me. As far as the Audible goes, yes. So I just created, I took so long on putting out audio versions of my books. I'm ashamed of it. But I have audiobooks out now for Volume 1. Volume 2 is in the works right now. I've got a very excellent reader on that. And the last book I just did, The Alien Agendas, I just released an audio version of that. Like a week or two ago. So that's available. And I have a few others that will be coming out very soon. I'm working on that for this coming year. So
excellent. Well done.
Thank you for asking. And it's really nice to meet anyone who encountered me at my very first public UFO event ever.
How old were you then? You were a kid.
I was 38 years old. I had big round glasses, nice black hair. And if you look carefully, you can see a gleam of hope in my eyes. It was awesome.
You still have big round glasses.
Well, they're a little more modern looking. Now, yeah.
Walter in Graham, Washington. Take it away, Walt. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes, Mr. Dolan. I'd like to ask you if there's something that happens to me. Lights that hover for several minutes above me and then turn in or make the noise and turn into either a sound of a small plane or a jet. And this has been going on for several years. I film them with a video camera, but all they appear to be is lights, and they can hover in the same place and just move slightly for minutes at a time, and then turn into these either a plane or a jet. Now, or even a helicopter. So I was wondering, do you get that from other people? This has been going on with me for a long time. I've only got one UFO that ever came close to me that was about 100 yards away. It came down to the ground, and it looked like just a yellow light, and it was just a round yellow disc, and it sat there for a good 10 seconds and then just took off. But that's the only one I've got that has a shape that I could actually say that. The other ones are lights. And I was just wondering if this...
Go ahead, Rich.
The answer is yes. The answer is absolutely yes. So there's there just seems to be something about these objects where they're able to either change the appearance of what they look like, or maybe actually physically transform into something else. But definitely they can change their appearance. I had a conversation, this was many, many years ago, with a gentleman who had what clearly was an abduction experience in the state of New York, where I live. And he was in a wooded area. He was a hunter. And this object came down very low. He saw it was an absolute disc-shaped craft. He got close enough to see it very well. And then he said it shot up, and it was indistinguishable from a point of light. He said it looked exactly like a star. But then it shot across the sky and then descended rapidly somewhere else. So it was, but it was disguised, you could say, as the point of light. And I've heard many stories similar to that and to what you just said. What's interesting to me is, you know, we keep talking about how, you know, most UFO sightings are misidentifications of this or that or the other thing. But what we don't talk about is how many UFOs are actually probably being disguised as conventional objects that we don't even notice, you know, or even can they be disguised as ordinary looking aircraft sometimes? I think the answer is yes, they certainly can be. They sometimes are, or disguised as points of light. I don't think we have even the slightest clue as to how many UFOs are actually out there above us or around us every day. I think it's actually quite a lot. I believe that there's an enormous amount of traffic probably that's going on around us, and we're still not really aware of most of it. It's just my opinion, but that's what I think. So Rich, thank you for the question. That was a good one.
What do you think of that Tic Tac video?
Well, the video, I mean, if you looked at the Tic Tac video by itself with nothing else, no context, you know, you could probably find a way to pass it off and say, oh, well, that could be anything. But that video is important and interesting because of the context. So we know the story that David Fravor had when he encountered that same object a little earlier in the day. You know, we know about the performance of this thing based on his testimony. And so I think that Tic Tac video is very important because you look at the shape of that, that's not a normal aerodynamic, it's not the normal shape of an aircraft that we can identify, and yet it was caught on the infrared, and it was clearly moving in ways that were unusual, if not extraordinary. They were certainly unusual. So I think that's the genuine real deal right there, and I think, you know, we're lucky to have that video.
Rich, a lot of people want to know if you're accepting emails through your website. Are you?
I do, yes. I get a lot of them, and I try to keep up. The main website where I get most of my activity is at Richard Golan Members. So there is Richard Golan Press, but Richard Golan Members is, I've got a lot of people who are members of that site, and I am very active in posting material there on a regular basis and also interacting with all the many members who are there. So I do keep myself busy in interacting with folks, but most of it is at richgolanmembers.com.
Richard, stay healthy, my friend, and I'll see you at an upcoming event sometime, my friend. Be well.
I look forward to it, George, as always. Thank you for having me on. It was wonderful.
Richard Dolan, one of the world's most renowned experts in UFOs. Up next, Rich Martini joins us. We'll be talking about the afterlife.